So good morning once more. I think like everybody here has seen my face at least a couple of times so far, but I'm going to introduce myself. The way we are going to do this is like each panelist is going to introduce themselves as well. And I'm going to make an intro, throw a question here, and we are going to see how that flows from that. I have a few canned questions, but hopefully you guys are going to make my job very easy by also asking questions. So so that's pretty much it. So my name is Fernanda. I work at Facebook as a production engineering manager. I have been working as a production engineer / SRE / whatever you want to call it, more or less since the beginning of my career, but it was only when I started working at Google that I actually felt, I'm not different than my sysadmin friends. Everybody here is different than my sysadmin friends. Maybe my job is different. Anyway, I've been at Facebook for about, it's going to be 3 years soon. And yeah, that's pretty much it. And I think, so.
Dave Barr, I've been at Twitter for over 2.5 years now. I will be a manager for almost a year now. Before that, I was a staff in staff SRE, supporting mainly like the tweet service, which is where all the tweets come from. Before that, I was at a little company, StumbleUpon, with some people over there. And then before that, Google for 6.5 years. So,
hi, I'm Abe Hassan. I manage search indexing SRE at Google. I've been at Google for about a year now. In 2 weeks, it'll be a year. But prior to that, kind of long, complicated story. Most notably, I worked for LiveJournal. If some of you have heard of that, I see a couple nods and a couple faces that are just like, I hope you didn't find mine. but that's sort of my past prior to Google, and I've been managing SRE or ops teams for 5 years now, 5.5 years now.
I'm Stephanie Dean, and I am now a TPM. I'm an individual contributor at Dropbox. Before that, I managed for about 10 years. Most of that at Amazon, a little at Facebook, a little at Twitter, a little at Activision. And now I'm enjoying being an IC. Okay.
So you're the only person here who hasn't been in SRE at Google, which is good. I mean, it's good to have some diversity. So the name of the panel was a little bit of a joke because we were like organizing the program and then everybody was talking about this movie, which I haven't seen, by the way, but people said it was a little inappropriate, and I like being inappropriate for those who know me, so I thought it was a great opportunity to do that. But that is something that is actually very true about like utilizing this title for the panel, which is Pedro mentioned in his opening keynote that like one of the things that is very hard is to kind of like define what a production engineer or a site reliability engineer does, and actually like get people to understand, because also it's not only about you self-identifying, but like people come from different backgrounds and they have like the preconceived notions about what to expect from an operations team. And so my first question for the panelists here is like, we know that for the companies we work for, like we try to get people that are very systems heavy, that also have a very good development skills, like software engineering skills. Like what is the difference of the role of the site reliability engineer or the production engineer versus like a software engineer in the team? Like what makes those people different?
I've been doing system and work. I went to Lisa many times and used Nix, and so I'm familiar with a lot with the SA. I come from an SA background. As far as SWEs versus SREs, from the, where they are like, you know, especially now that we have grown at Twitter, we really have tried to think of our systems as software and not think of our systems as systems and computers and machines. So that's where we would like to keep them close together. The differentiating, yes, they, you know, system SREs have more of a systems knowledge background bent than their typical programmer. I'll just leave it at that for now.
I kind of, the way I like to think about it, I think of software engineering as kind of the high level overall overarching discipline that we all sort of participate in, and different people kind of focus on different tracks. You have people who are front end software engineers and they are very good at doing that kind of thing, which I completely cannot wrap my mind around. There's people who are back end engineers and there are people who are reliability engineers or production engineers. That's sort of how I think about it. And so when I think of my counterparts in the development team, I sometimes hesitate to call them the software engineers and call us not the software engineers. Sometimes I'll think of it as product development engineering or that team engineering or that sort of idea, just to kind of indicate that we're all doing the same, practicing the same discipline, if it were.
Totally echo that. I tend to think of SWEES as focusing on the code or the service from the product level down, and SRE is focusing on the code and the service from the operational reliability up, and then they have to just kind of meet in the middle, and hopefully that middle is like 80%, so there's a lot of overlap, but I mean, we can't expect everybody to know everything.
Yeah, I agree. I actually really like this discipline, the software engineering discipline, and that is all of these different things. I know that some people, and I mean, at the end of the day, we need the people with all the disciplines to make sure services are stable, reliable, and have good features out, and like having a way to demonstrate that on our hiring process, which brings me to my next question, is very interesting, because we need to test people. Like, if you have a company with a lot of people that are really good in algorithms and have zero experience on performance, what is going to happen to you? So how do you guys deal with the hiring part of that to make sure you have all of the different people that you need? And by the way, questions are welcome. Just walk to the microphone, ask your questions. Otherwise, maybe we should start on the other side, so she doesn't get all, Stephanie doesn't get always like everybody already answered this question, so I'm just going to agree now.
Oh, come on. So how we handle hiring versus like SWEES, can you like?
Yeah, the hiring, like, because we need a performance specialist, we need like the deep level systems people, we need like people that are actually really good on coding but savvy on like system side. Mm-hmm. I don't know if like, does the software engineering interviewing process for the companies that you guys work on, do they ever test any systems type of skills? Because I haven't been in a company that actually does that mainstream.
Not that I know of. I think it's really difficult, like if we're talking about building teams, it's really difficult to get into specialties right off the bat. You need all the things, but I would prefer to hire people at all different levels of technical skills. Juniors can do the crap work, sorry. That's what happens. And as you get up, the mid-level guys are looking at architecture and they're automating and that kind of thing, and the seniors are trying to do design and working with the developers and all of that. But I don't think there's a single approach to how you start building a team. Mm-hmm. And you really have to look at your workload, and not just the workload for 3 months, but your workload for the next 18, and how your team's going to grow into that and how the company's going to change.
Yeah, and I think there's also a certain amount of luxury that you have or not, depending on your size. If you're a StumbleBob, we're a small team of five people, we didn't have the luxury of specializing and finding the right perfect person. So it's just getting what we could work with, the talent we had, getting it out and getting it working. And Google, Facebook, Twitter, we have much more specialization, much more grouping of people in the right little spot. And so, yeah, I think it varies a lot.
One of the things I found interesting, last year's keynote here, actually, Ben Trainer talked about some of the principles that we have for SRE at Google. Pedro repeated a lot of the sort of similar sort of themes in his keynote this year, or called them out at least. And one of the things that I found interesting was this idea of aligning incentives, where you kind of need both teams to agree that both teams need to exist, sort of idea. And one of the ways that we align incentives on the hiring front is by saying that the total headcount is allocated by the product development organization. And if they decide that we need people who are focused on this, then we invest in hiring people who are more focused on this. If they say, you know what, our developers are happy being on call, they're happy with the state of the system as it is, or not just the developers, but the entire sort of team is happy with it, then they don't need to. It's sort of a question of where do you want to invest in? And so that doesn't quite answer the how do we interview question. It's the how do we decide who to interview question. Mm-hmm.
But it's a kind of a need of a service, right? Each person brings something different to the table. Mm-hmm. Yes, first question.
All right, so there is a boundary, some membrane between software development engineers and software reliability engineers. And it starts with a different title and different goals, but it's sort of, that membrane seems to thicken or lessen throughout the time. Do you think it's good to have that membrane there? Like how much separation do you like to have? And do you find yourself constantly wanting to lessen that? And how do you do that?
Go ahead.
I think a little bit of tension is healthy. And for those of us who have been in ops for a long time, it's much better than it was 10 years ago already. I think embedding people, getting the SREs to sit with the SWEs, sharing the workload, sharing your ticket queue, like all of that stuff helps. But at the end of the day, we come at problems with a different perspective, and that's healthy. So I think completely obliterating that might be a mistake.
I think that actually I will disagree with you that we have different objectives. Like, for instance, at Facebook, one of my teams is the cache production engineering team. And the cache production engineering team works in three things. We work in TAO, we work in Memcache, and that is this Mac router, which is an open source like a router for cache requests anyway. But we have the same objective. We need to provide a service that have good features, is reliable, and that the product can use. So our goal is the same. Then there is another thing which is which I think is healthy, which is the separation of ownership. Because, for instance, my team owns part of the infra that the Swiss don't own, but we have enough knowledge overlap so we can actually work together in a healthy way. Like, for instance, my teams will even commit code to the main code base of the products, like because we want more metrics or because we want to try out different things, while they are committing code to actually in our code base to support features that they built in the service and stuff like that. So I see as the same.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of a segue into your next question, which is the service requirements. One of the things that I noticed that's different is, you mentioned cache and being aligned on the same thing. Well, if your service is the front end that serves your product, the engineering is going to be pulled off on writing this whiz bang feature that has nothing to do with the reliability of the system or your service. And so having a dedicated sort of SRE there that's focused on the reliability of that service. So that's where the gradation kind of varies as you go up the stack. It tends to, you tend to have different sort of ways of working than you do down the lower of the stack, where the service is a service product and not a user product.
And that's sort of something that I've seen a lot, which is as the industry seems to go through these phases where we say, well, everybody can do all the same thing, so everybody's the same, versus let's try to specialize, and sort of the pendulum swings a little bit back and forth. And sort of my ideal, at least, what I'm trying to get working, not to say that I've got it perfect, is the idea that we do have different teams. We are focused a little bit on different aspects of the same problem, but ultimately we are trying to provide the same thing to everybody. And the extension of that is sometimes what makes most sense for everybody is the thing that is painful for your team or painful for some other team. That we you know, by default, we try to say, well, this is my group. Let's optimize for my group. You can't launch this thing because it'll screw up my whatever. Like, sometimes that is actually still the right thing to do. And striking the right balance between that is tough. It's especially hard if one team is always the one who is doing the sacrifice, as it were, and another team is always getting their way. So finding that balance, sometimes going one way, sometimes going the other way, as the situation dictates, that tends to, I think, help keep the balance and the incentives aligned.
All right, thanks.
Well, we can take one more question.
So I work in release engineering operations, which is similar but not quite the same as a lot of SREs. And I think one of the big differences that we wind up supporting, so the SREs, most of the ones that I've talked to are like, yeah, we run everything on Linux, it's all the web, it's all great. And down in my world, we have to support Windows and OS X and Linux and mobile. And I don't know if any of you guys have experience outside of Linux, which we refer to as Linux is the easy case. But where do you sort of find the people and what sort of mindset do you have? And we have this problem, especially with Windows. Windows is such a proprietary world that the people that we get for operations, most of them are thinking, it's Windows. You push the button, you reboot it, you reinstall it, whatever. But we find that we really have to go to the developer side and train those people in operations so that they understand, like, the Win32 API. Do you have those same kind of experiences? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Do you guys have anything? No?
No.
Okay. So in Facebook, we actually do have so we have a release engineering team that takes care of, like, releasing the site, all those papers you heard about, like, the BitTorrent stuff, all that awesome. Like, that's, like, the release engineering team releasing the website. Then we have a production engineering team that when we started, like, Facebook has done a lot of on mobile, like, for a long time. But at some point, we were like, okay, let's stop doing this as a side thing for everyone else and make this a thing, because it is a thing. So we built a production engineering team that is the mobile team. That the first thing that I had to do was to work on the release testing release process for the mobile applications. We didn't have a specialized hiring stream for that, though, because we thought that, like, there are, like, many different shades of, like, profiles and people with different interests, and that we would find the people within the hiring pipeline that we had that would be interested. Because at Facebook, like, you start a bootcamp and then you pick your team during that process. And we actually managed to hire people who were interested in this problem space. Is Joe Morrow by any chance here? No? Okay, because he's the manager for that team. But I think it was a good experience, because then you start, okay, that is a curve, because you need to learn the specifics of that problem space. But that's the same. When I started working in cache, I had never seen a memcache from close by before, and was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna learn all these things. And I think people did approach the problem with that, but we hired, like, the traditional, like, production engineering profile for that role as well.
Thank you. Hi. So I have a question for specifically the NCGs that get introduced in the industry about SRE. So to be honest with you, while I was in the school last year, for me, development was something that I create, and it should work for the users. And SRE or the operation is something that they make sure it is consistent, it's available all the time. So we had that mindset. So my question is, for the NCG, they're not so much sure about what exactly the endpoints or the variations are there in the SRE world. So how much it is important do you think that the involvement of an SRE is during the development? And how in all the companies you implement that? Because to be honest with you, if I studied something to develop, but I'm interested to do something in SRE, at the same time I don't want to lose my freedom of developing something And so for the NCGs, they always have this confusion that am I taking the right decision to completely going off of development and doing something cool? But so how at all the companies, the environment is there, the involvement of SRE during the development phase at some point? I'm just curious to know about that.
I would think we all have a design review process. I've seen it work like 5 million ways. But I think involving SREs in product discussions before you actually have a design is great. It's cool. It's kind of a luxury, to be honest. But for me, once you're actually to the point where you want to decide on a design, you should have an SRE there. They should understand how you handle messaging, how you handle backend data stores. They should know contacts and all of the other teams for all your dependencies. They should make you think through all of those things before you even submit a design review doc to a bunch of staff suites. As early and as often as possible is really a good mantra.
And about specifically about sort of new college grads, and it's you know, the world is still sort of their oyster as it in a sense, and I think it's good for people to see a little bit of everything. I hate for people to kind of make any sort of decision in any sort of way very early on that restricts them from any other opportunities later on. They have a whole career in front of them. One program that we have at Google is called Mission Control, where people who are in the software engineering track, they can say, I want to take 6 months and go see SRE from the inside. Sometimes it's used as a recruiting tool for SRE to hire qualified software engineers. But sometimes it's good for SRE for software engineers to say, I want to see what this is like. Sometimes they say, you know what, this is good. I learned a bit. I can take this back to what I want to be doing. Sometimes they say, this is actually what I want to be doing. I don't have statistics off the top of my head of how the sort of the dispositions end up. But that's a program that we have that has been pretty successful in kind of accomplishing a lot of those goals.
How, I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure.
Oh my God. How do you do that when you're in a much smaller company?
I might actually redirect it over towards Dave. I think at a smaller company there's I don't want to use siloization because that has a negative connotation, but there's less specialization. I think people have their hands in a little bit more stuff, and my instinct is that you have just naturally a little bit more opportunity. But if you want to add to that, or not?
Yeah. I think for sure one way SREs contribute is that we make sure that all the base sort of, you mentioned messaging and all these standard things that everybody has to do, we make sure that they all are rock solid and they do what we want to do. Twitter kind of has a really huge advantage in that we are, our frameworks and everything are relatively homogenous versus other organizations I've been in. And so it's kind of stupid to reinvent the wheel. You know, what some of us refer to as programming masturbation exercises of just writing something because it's new and cool and it's different than what we have. And more often than not, they just don't understand what we have and they just come up with some new idea to do the same thing that somebody else does.
So all of you have a design review stuff, and then like Dropbox have a design review, like Google, I know it has, like Twitter, you also do design review. Mm-hmm. So at Facebook, as far as I know, we have a product review, but we don't do design review. Challenging. So there is no formal design review. And I think Facebook is kind of like this magic chaos that works actually very well, because one of the things we want to continue doing is like moving very, very fast as an organization. And if everything that you want to do that is going to have a lot of impact, we focus a lot of impact, you need to collect 3 rubber stamps, then that's going to slow you down. So the model that we have for shared ownership and everybody, like production engineering and software engineering, operating like a single teams, what you get from that is that you don't usually the what is going to be done is already decided together. So the how is a little bit of where you can decide how much the individuals themselves want to be involved with. And we know, like, for instance, going back to the cash world, like, we do have a performance analysis tools. We are not involved in a feature, but then we check, like, that our nightly shadow testing say, like, oh, that is a 1% regression here. Then we go back and we start that conversation right there. Because it's usually people do want to do the right thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and unless that's, like, damaging, like, for instance, we don't want to undermine like performance, we don't want to put regressions in the system, we don't want to add the complexity. If those things hold true, then the thing like naturally balances itself. And like, for instance, like a lot of this stuff, everything that is related with efficiency, performance, reliability that goes into the software engineer roadmap, it's a conversation that happened with the production engineering team and is not done separate. So I don't feel the need to review what they are doing because I know what they are doing when they planned it, right? Like, so. Question.
So a little bit different of a question. If you look at our software engineering organization and the ratio of male to female in that, it is pretty good, 25 to 75%, I guess, off the top of my head. If you look at our SRE organization, it's probably 2% is my guess. I'm curious why you feel like there's such a divide and what can be done to make that better.
You first, man.
Okay. So I think I actually like one of the things that happens to you when you happen to be a woman working in this field is that everybody like magically assumes you became like a gender inequality specialist, which is not really exactly the case. But that being said, like, it's natural that you are in an environment and you observe things and you learn lessons along the way, and then you kind of like try to see what are the try to understand and figure out why the hell are we here and this is the case and like all of these things. One of my theories is that like, for instance, the ratio of women doing SRE production engineering job is like smaller than the ratio of women and men in computer science schools, for instance. And the reason for that is that you know that there is a lot that goes into our jobs, which is not taught at the university. So it's a much more natural path, like, okay, I want to work with computers, I go to the university, and when I'm out of that, I'm a software engineer. While for an SRE, like a lot of times, like if you do this process, at the end of the day, you don't cut it, right? Like because you are missing something else. And that's when the environment you grow up in has a lot of actually impact on what is gonna be the things that you were more exposed to or like where your curiosity developed along the way. And so that's kind of like where we lose like that extra percentage. It is a pipeline issue, but it's not really a pipeline issue, but also a cultural issue in my perspective. Mm-hmm. When I was like 5 years old, my father was a sound engineer like for concerts and stuff, but he was really picky and nerdy about the like his cables and all of this, so he like used it to make his cables at home, and I grew up like holding those, so he would like I don't even know what is the like melding, is that the together and stuff like that. So this is like the place where I grew up, and like I didn't have a brother, so I would go like 5 years old going to the soccer stadium together with my father. Like I didn't grow in a world that there was things that girls could not do and boys could do, and I think that that's not the case for a lot of people. And that's my observation from my like 15-ish years working in this field.
I'll do a separate tact on that. So I grew up with many guys in my neighborhood, and I was the youngest and a girl, and I was playing football and all that fun stuff. The tech world is very interesting, and I didn't actually buy into any of this gender stuff for a really long time. Now that I'm older, ops in general deals with problems and conflicts very differently from how most women like to approach problems. We're usually, and I'm generalizing, We like to collaborate. We like to have very very nice conversations to reason through things. And my experience over the last 15-ish years is that most men like conflict and they embrace it. It's my
no, we don't.
But it's true. Like my man's favorite phrase is embrace the conflict, and he's amazing at it. And it's different at home, I promise. It's tough. It's tough to go into a room filled with men who talk over each other, who are typically right in their own mind and don't stop and listen. And it sounds funny, but it's true. Like, if you just stop and like take a look at your meetings and how they actually function,
the dynamics.
The dynamics are very different.
I see that a lot.
And I think that SRE, like production engineering, this job that a lot of times, like what happens, not all organizations, for instance, at Facebook, we have something that is different, which is like if you write code, you own it and you are responsible for it in production. So that like touches all the software engineers as well. But in other organizations, so I know, like, for instance, Google, the SREs carry the pager and stuff like that. When you have an outage and everybody's looking at you to get the company back or like the product back on its feet, is like a level of exposure that, you know, like that exciting discomfort that you feel when you are on that. Like, imagine that you have to live on that, because we are different all the time and we are always in the spotlight, right? Like, for instance, not because I'm inappropriate and loud and blah, but everybody knows my name. Like at Facebook, like, you know, everybody knows me. And you get that for the good or bad just because you are different, right? Like, so it's a little bit more pressure as well, I think.
Please correct me if I'm mansplaining at all, but I think there's two things that I've noticed. One is the point that you made, which is, you know, ops or SRE or whatever you want to call the organization has the stigma of being the group that is always the one saying no, is always the one saying you have to do it this mm-hmm. way. That it's, I don't like that attitude. I think with a lot of our development counterparts, not taking that attitude has earned us gotten us points just for not being jerks. That's sort of one part. But the other part to go back to the original question, I'm actually curious to see if you two agree or if you believe this. Being on call is hard on a person. It takes time out from outside of work. If you have a family, and women in tech tend to be more disproportionately, women in general tend to be more disproportionately affected by raising a family. Being on call is not necessarily always compatible with trying to have anything outside of work sometimes. And I think that's probably another thing that pushes a lot of people away.
Yeah, I think I'm curious with Google, with you guys owning all the pagers. Like, at Twitter, SREs are just another person holding the pager. So the SREs are just as likely to be on call as the SREs.
Yeah, so the same at Facebook. Yeah. But I just feel that aspect of the job puts people particular, because you can be a feature engineer and nobody, like, unless you wrote that feature that became big, you can be like, you know, down in your dark cave, nobody knows you exist, and you are just doing your job. But when you are in a team that is responsible for like keeping the site up, at some point the site is not going to be up and everybody's going to be asking you why, right? Like, and like, it's a double spotlight for women, because we are always in kind of in the spotlight for good and bad. Like, yes. I hope we answered a little bit.
That's a tough one to follow up. So with, you know, so many companies, I'm at Dropbox, us included, we utilize, you know, external cloud providers such as, you know, there's PagerDuty, there's, you know, we're looking at different chat systems, all these things. So the role of an SRE also has to take into account potentially managing some of these external providers. You know, we can't get notified if PagerDuty is down or if there's some sort of, you know, connection issue there. You know, how do you think this has changed some of the roles that we have to take on in our field?
external stuff?
Yeah. Like PagerDuty maybe even some third party.
For us, most of my SREs, we don't manage any external stuff. We have another team that will manage the external vendor relationships.
But so, I mean, to go back to my startup world before I was at Google, that was sort of a big thing in my mind of like, what does it mean for us to be using something like PagerDuty? What does it mean for us to use AWS? I mean, you have a whole slew of things that are just that you're offloading, and sort of it generates a bit of an existential crisis. What are we doing here? The way we tried to resolve that was by saying like, we're actually offloading the business critical, but not the point of our business. Like, we're not here to build alerting solutions. We're here to be alerted and fix things and keep things going. It's hard to internalize that because that really kind of makes you focus on what are you exactly here for, and then you can kind of zoom in on that and spend more time on that. That's sort of the way I've reconciled that in my mind, at least.
And I think that like this wave of software as a service stuff have actually like taken a little bit the weight away, because like in the past you had to install something, a third party software in your computer inside of your infrastructure, and everybody like would look like, I don't want to touch it. Like, you know, like today it might be that you need to have some people that manage that relationship and stuff like that, but you also needed that in the past, right? So you just eliminated one step, which is like someone has to take care of that ugly duckling, which nobody wants to touch. Like, if you can't see the insides, it's not fun, is it?
I would say that like on the hiring front, it makes soft skills so much more important. Like, can they communicate externally? Can they represent your team externally? Are they organized enough to follow up? Because vendors don't always follow up. Like, I used to have junior network engineers who were dealing with Knox and that kind of thing at Amazon, and it was very telling when we had made a bad soft skills hiring decision, because that's what leads to outages. So mission critical stuff should be supported by people who can actually support it well.
Question. I'm Glenn Jacoby. I'm a SRE at Bloomberg Manager. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on managing change. As we all know, change is a big deal with respect to outages. And I think that's related a little bit to the gender thing. Somebody has to be the adult in the room sometimes. So I'd like to hear a conversation around that.
I actually had a sort of a big revelation over Christmas this last year, because sort of for the last several years, I was very much an advocate of the sort of the do stuff, figure it out, keep going, that sort of thing, and trying to diminish how often changes actually do cause problems, because sometimes problems are caused by change, sometimes they're not, and I was saying they're all equal. And what we had over the holiday season, we had production freeze for 3 weeks. And we track how many times we got paged in a week to try to keep pushing that number down. And I noticed we my team in particular, we average about 15 pages a week. Except as soon as the freeze went in, we went down to something like 3 or 4. And I had this like, well, this means that somebody was doing something to account for the other sort of 75% of the alerts that we were getting. And I thought about this a little bit. Why is this a little bit different from what I'd been thinking about up until now? And I kind of came up with one or two conclusions. One was that a production freeze really only works if everybody freezes. You can't just freeze your own thing and expect to get that same sort of thing.
Also, what happened the week after the freeze?
It went right back up.
Yeah.
Above
the level.
No, and not in my case, maybe. Yeah. So there's also the effect of delaying your changes and so on. But what I realized in that was, okay, so a two-thirds of our outages, or two-thirds of our pages at least, were caused by somebody doing something. What can we actually take away from this? Because we don't want to operate in this mode year-round. And so at that point, I was like, okay, guys, if you're doing something in production, you need to tell other people in IRC, or we need to communicate, we need to create a change log. Because I don't want to tell people don't change stuff, but I do want the person who's getting paged to not drop 5 hours to figure out that somebody fat-fingered a command, didn't tell anyone because they thought it was okay, they control C'd at the right time, not quite, and continued on. So I was like, guys, please, if you're doing something, just announce an IRC. Don't wait for someone to approve. Just do it. And we extended this practice out to our development teams, who are also sort of the second biggest offenders of doing stuff and having problems resolved. And that alone, I think, has made things a lot easier to diagnose. I'm a little bit more concerned about that front than I am about just preventing it in the first place, because that gets us into...
Or hoping that a review will make it less bad. Yeah.
So question, nature versus nurture for SRE development. You mentioned mission control is something Google does to build up that capability in people that don't have that background. How much do you guys see that there is a kind of background that is required versus the nature side versus it's something that can be built?
I always go for nature, to be honest. So I hire people who are customer service oriented because I think ops is a service and we have customers. I'm way less worried about the technical side, to be honest. And I think the people who have been most successful on my teams are people who have the soft skills and the drive to learn more. Almost everybody can pick up the technical skills, but you cannot teach soft skills easily enough to make it worth your while.
Yeah, I see as a different type of soft skills, like more being like a solution-oriented mind instead of like, you know, there are two types of people, the ones that they are going to go somewhere and then come back with the next big invention in the world, and the others that are going to see what are the problems, and then the invention might eventually solve a problem. And then the other type of people, which are the people that observe the world and then build solutions for the problems that they see. Those things are very like two extremes. And I think that this is a little bit of a nature thing, right? Like being like a solution oriented, like what is the problem that I see and what I'm going to do to actually fix that, instead of like, let me go. I'm going to go out to be 6 months there. When I come back, I'm going to have something awesome. You will love it. You don't really know that you need it yet, but I'm going to get you. Like, I know these minds exist. I know they are important, but I don't identify that as being like a production engineer SRE type of like mentality.
I sort of think of it as kind of in front of the camera, behind the camera sort of thing. I like coming to work. I like seeing that things are working because I feel like I know I've done a good job if things are fine. I like the process of avoiding failure and managing failure when it does happen. I don't know how much this generalizes. I don't get the same sort of, I worked for 6 months and did a thing. That doesn't give me the same sort of satisfaction as seeing something work every day. The corollary to this that I've sort of realized, and I'm kind of bringing it back to product development and SRE sort of interactions, is in these sorts of trade-offs, I've noticed that SRE always probably overestimates the amount of work something takes on an ongoing basis and underestimates how much work it is up front. And development teams tend to do the opposite. This is going to be a 5 month thing. Well, it's going to take me 3 hours a day to do. Just round down, both of you, and then compare numbers. I've noticed that, and that's sort of the habit and approach that I've noticed just in sort of the nature side of things. I think people can learn. I could probably learn how to understand CSS and front end stuff if I really wanted to, but I don't really want to. And I feel like that's actually true for a lot of people. They can figure out how to run systems. They can figure out how to do back-end stuff or whatever within sort of the overarching discipline. I don't want to. I like what I do.
Next question.
Hi, I just had a question about how do companies like Facebook, Twitter, and Google treat SREs that maintain services that are stateful services, like maintaining your databases or any such services? Is there a difference in how you hire or how you treat those SRE teams compared to how when they maintain front-end services or mid-tier?
No, not really. Sometimes you want like people who had this, like, it's like you see, you hire someone, they are a good production engineer, and then you see in their background, they had like an extensive experience on like MySQL, like the likelihood of them choosing to go to MySQL, like is, or like working in the MySQL infrastructure is kind of high. But it's really interesting. So I work in a few teams and I did an experiment, people experiment. I started managing this team that takes care of our age-based infrastructure, which is a lot of data. It's not the case of Memcache and Tao, the other like stuff. But I actually got some people from the cache team to go help the age-based team. And in the end of the day, you notice like that the like persistent storage or just like memory, like you know, like more volatile data. That is a lot of things that are, that are common, and the knowledge you gain with one is somewhat applicable in the other and vice versa. So yeah, that's what I learned with my little experiment.
There's also sort of an interesting distinction to be drawn between teams, SRE teams that actually develop that infrastructure, which I think is something that you might want to talk about a little bit, versus teams that run a piece of infrastructure that is stateful.
Right, and that's the distinction we kind of have come to realize sometimes, is that, like I kind of wrote this down, like there are a bunch of different factors that, I don't know if it's necessarily a different person, but the dynamic of the team is very different if it's something, if it's a very producty thing that's very dynamic, high velocity code, and affects the users, versus something that is lower code velocity, very low level infrastructure. You have to get it bulletproof. It's a multi-tenant system, tons of internal customers. Those are very different working environments. Some people like one versus the other. And I don't know if that's an answer to the question, but I think those are very different environments.
There is one case that my team is actually currently in. We support five different services. Three of them are stateless. One of them is very stateful, and one of them is
halfway
in between. And I do see we sometimes like to gloss over that fact that one of them is stateful. Oh, this release had a problem, let's roll it back. Like it's a database. You can't just swap out the binary and hope everything works.
Right.
And you know, it's not a hard point to make. You say that and people are like, oh, that's right, I forgot. Why'd you forget? Anyway. I find that I don't know if there's necessarily a skill set differentiation between the two. It's just what problem are you trying to solve is different.
This is kind of a philosophy question. What makes SRE SRE? And I ask this because I've seen some companies they developed an SRE team by taking their system and team and issuing new business cards. Yeah. So what, let me say this more positively, what can an organization ask themselves to, as a maybe litmus test, to determine if they are embodying SRE or change their business cards?
Ask your doctor if SRE is right for you.
Or, and maybe what at your organization makes SRE different than system administration?
Yeah, what's the start? Yeah.
So the thing that comes to mind as I sort of think about this a little bit is the difference really comes down to administering versus engineering. Mm-hmm. The coarsest way I can describe it, this might not be completely accurate on all fronts, is sort of white box versus black box sort of thing. I can administer services, I can integrate services, I can take stuff from that a vendor sells me and put them together and figure out how to manage those services. But I'm never actually getting inside the service. I'm never actually fiddling with it. I'm never actually saying, whether I'm fiddling with it myself or telling somebody else, here's what you ought to do, I'm still managing it from the outside. And from the SRE organization, there are a lot of things that we do from the outside, like sometimes capacity management, like measurement and load testing. How does the system perform is kind of a black box. But then figuring out how to get that down from some number to some lower number, I think, is where we cross the boundary into the actual engineering side of things. That's sort of the way I've come to terms with it in my mind.
I think sysadmin is a terrible word. Because, I mean, you really just get these, like, connotations of throwing shit over the wall, which is terrible. So I would argue that perhaps, like, no company should just have sysadmins at this point. Like, everybody should be able to help themselves. And if you're just hiring box monkeys, then automate it.
I think you guys said it enough. I can tell a little story. Like, I don't know if you guys like little stories. When I started working as a sysadmin, the first thing that I noticed that was very different between the work that I did and the work that my friends did was that they had their 2-3 Unix servers, and the problem they had to resolve in the next month was to make that email server work with a feature so-and-so and so-and-so what. My job was that I had 250 servers dying and becoming alive every single moment connected through an unreliable network. And I had to develop a way to actually reinstall these services, configure them properly, make sure they were always available and the database replication was working fine. And that was my job. And like, yes, there is an email client there, but that was like 15 minutes last week. And now I need to make this repeatable and reliable, right? Like, and I think that's a little bit of the difference here. Like, it's... we are not here to, like, of course, there is work that goes into, like, fine-tuning things for, like, the specific case that you want. But the scalability and reliability challenge is, and all the automation and the coding that goes into, like, doing these things, I think that is the work that we do. And, like, developing tools for analysis of performance are, like, all of these types of things that we do that is actually go much beyond than like finding what is the right configuration setting on a software, while we are saying this software should have that configuration setting, right? And sometimes even developing the features to do that.
I would also, I mean, just to maybe tangent a little bit, I kind of would draw a distinction between SRE and DevOps a little bit. I sort of see them as separate planes, because you can have a very strong SRE team that does all the things that we've just been talking about, but still has a sort of adversarial relationship with the product development or feature development counterparts. You're focused on different things in service of the same goal, hopefully. And so I sort of take DevOps as a step further, which is the principle of, like, do you actually get along? Can you talk to these people and not be on the defensive? Are you okay trusting the other person that we're making the right trade-offs, that sort of thing? I sort of take that as a cultural plane, even though a lot of people will take it as, you know, you are hiring for a DevOps. Usually you never say a DevOps engineer, you usually say DevOps rock star. but that's the sort of thing, like, it's turned into a job title that can be anything from a sysadmin who knows what Chef is to an SRE and in between. So I try to treat them as a separate plane entirely.
Yeah, do we want to tackle what SRE versus DevOps?
Yeah.
Do we
want to talk? Yay, let's go for it. I know some people love it. I was not going to mention the bad word, but
who was a definition or a distinction between those two? I mean, the only distinction I've ever consistently come up with is just size, and it's just this horrible way of, I don't know, classifying it. But it seems like you start a certain size, the team is generally sort of DevOps, and once it reaches a certain size, it sort of is now magically SRE.
I think DevOps is more of a, like, a practice than a profession. Is a way of doing things. It's not the thing that you do. So I didn't develop by myself, but I got, like, Pedro, who works at Facebook, has this allergy, and I just, like, caught his allergy too, because it's a kind of like a way to do things, but it's not the job itself, right? Like,
The cynical part of me, though, then says a DevOps tool is a sysadmin tool written after 2006.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of DevOps being used. It's become everything you can imagine. Seen it used as sysadmins, sort of just rebranding. which is a little frustrating when you hear people say. And I've actually seen this where someone was like, "And my company, my development team and my DevOps team don't get along." Like, well, then you don't really have a DevOps team. Like, you just like find replaced. But everything is now kind of it's an overused term. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I like the practice. I just don't like the word.
Do we have more questions?
I think it's time.
Oh, yeah. It is time. It went so fast. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, the panelists.